1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7 says, "Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives." More literally, from the actual Greek, the word considerate would read this way: "Husbands, in the same way, fix your wives as you live with them." Now, you already know that's not true, but I hope the rest of the message will be true. But isn't that what often we as husbands, as men, want to do? Want to fix things and fix our wives, and it rarely goes very well. Actually, the word fix, the word considerate that the Apostle Paul Peter used, literally means to live with knowledge. So husbands, in the same way, live with knowledge. Be considerate of your wives as you live with them, and treat them as you get to know them, as you do the hard, intentional work of knowing your wife. Respect, honor what you learn as you live with them. Hey, I want to welcome you to Mount Olive Church. We've been in a series entitled Marriage in a New Light. It's actually not all that new. It's really, really old, but it may seem new because the principles we're talking about, you might say, those seem like they might be outdated. Actually, they're very much in date as it relates to relationships and the marriage relationship specifically as we look at what Scripture says regarding marriage. Now, you, if you've been walking with us, you know that this entire series has been built off of a passage of Scripture, some of the most famous words ever written on the topic of love. You've probably heard this at a wedding at some point. It's from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and we've been looking at different aspects of 1 Corinthians chapter 13, and we've done most of the four verses we've been looking at, but we're going to close it out with a few aspects of this passage in the teaching part of this series. As we kind of do this, let's read 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4, 5, 6, and 7 together out loud. I'll put the words up on the screen for us. Together out loud. "Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, and always perseveres." Now, when the Apostle Paul wrote this, he wasn't writing with marriages primarily in his mind. He was writing to the church in Corinth that was deeply divided. And he says, here's how you live out love, love like God has for us. And he defines love in this way. I believe that the most closest and most intimate relationship, physical relationship we will ever have this side of heaven is in a one flesh marriage relationship. And so if this is applicable to the church, undoubtedly it's applicable to us in our marriage relationships. Now, if you haven't been part of the series and there's pieces of this, you're like, I wonder what that means or how to tease that out a little further. You'll have to go to listen online at our website. But today we're going to look at these words in this passage particularly that say, love is patient, love is kind, it does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. And what we're going to see as we dive into this is a little bit what we saw in 1 Peter chapter 3. Husbands, live with knowledge and then honor, respect your wife. And I think that with this could be defined as one word, which we're going to talk about today, which is value. Now, if you are married, you probably have your own stories of this truth, but you probably heard this statement even if you're not married, and that is that opposites attract. That for some reason, we are often attracted to people who are just different than us in some way. Now, undoubtedly, if you're married, there's things about your personality and so on that is similar to your spouse. But I bet there are some significant areas of your life where you are just very different from your spouse. And in fact, I bet when you first met them, some of those differences were extremely attractive. extremely attractive. You know, one of the differences that many couples experience, it just helps make marriage work better, is that in a marriage, there's a fun person, and then there's like a not fun person. And they attract to each other, right? And so you probably know this in your marriage relationship. There's a fun person. By that, I mean that the first car in the train of their personality is fun, right? And they're just always looking to have some fun, a good time. The not fun person, it's not that they don't know how to have fun, but they're just, I'll call them a thinking person. It just means the first train in their car of trains is they think, and they're always calculating and thinking, is this a good idea? And where will this go? We're fun people. They just kind of do it and then find out what happens, right? And every relationship needs both, right? You just need, because if you only have not fun people, your relationship kind of gets boring. But if you have two fun people, you're probably homeless in like an hour after marriage, right? Because no one's really thinking, right? So you need both. And often you're attracted to one another. You know, Mandy and I, we experienced this, opposites attract. When I first met her, and this is still true of her personality, one of the things I was so attracted to, other than she's so beautiful, like beyond that, one of the things I was so attracted to is she is a free spirit, fun person. And she just approached life, which you know who I am in the equation, right? So she just approached life with this joy and gusto, and it was like, let's just try it and see, right? And for me, who's always thinking and calculating, and it was just like her laughter and her ease at life. She was just this free spirit. And I remember being so attracted to her regarding that personality trait. But this is an incomplete statement, and you know this if you're married. Although opposites attract, what's more fully true is opposites attract at first. That's what's more fully true. They will oppose later, right? And sometimes the very thing that we were like, oh, I love this about you. You start doing life and marriage together, and all of a sudden you're like, you drive me crazy, right? Because you're so different than me. One of the ways this played out in our like fun thinking marriage for Maddie and I did ask her if I could share some of these, so I think she's okay with it. She said after the first service, we'll just talk later. So I don't know what that means. I'd be like, you got a nail in your head. Anyway, so I hope she's not listening. So one of the ways this played out in our marriage is me being a thinker and a planner and kind of particular, very particular. When I wash the car, I like look at the weather, I kind of imagine what's going to happen, and I have this desire. I like clean cars, and when I wash the vehicle, I want it to be clean for like at least an hour after I washed it, right? It's just a me thing. Maybe you're different, but that's a me thing. I just want it to be clean for a little bit. And so when I drive our vehicles, without even thinking, I'm just thinking, because I'm the not fun one, right? So I'm just thinking all the time, and I'm driving, and there's a puddle, you miss the puddle, and there's a pothole, and you miss the pothole. It's just how I do life, right? Well, my wife, Mandy, when she drives the car, she's just driving to have fun, right? So she doesn't even see puddles. I don't think she sees them. She doesn't see potholes. She's just like, yeah, kids, let's go. We're having a good time, right? And she's just having fun. In fact, I think sometimes for fun people, and if you're a fun person, you're like, yeah, that's how it works. For fun people, they see puddles, and it's not something to be avoided. It's an invitation, right? It's like, how fast can I hit that thing? And kids have this, right? Parents, you know this. You see mud, and you're like, kids, let's go around the mud. And your kid's like, no, this is an invitation, Mom. This is where we have fun, right? And so this is just how Mandy and I are so different. It was funny, a while back, maybe a year ago, we were having a conversation, and I'd washed the vehicle, of course, and she went to the city, and she came back, and it's just a mess. I'm like, oh, you know, and she said, Alvin, you got to know, I tried so hard today. I was doing so good. You'd be so proud of me, Alvin. I was doing so good, and I was missing all the puddles, and I was doing so good, and then I just stopped thinking for like 10 seconds and I hit a puddle and it was just all lost anyways. But you would have been so proud of me. I'm like, Mandy, I'm proud of you. I'll go wash the car, right? So it's just like, we're just so different in how we approach life. And sometimes it can be so annoying when they're different than us. And you know what? One time she said, Elvin, when I drive, the other day I tried thinking, but it just hurts my head after a while. How do you do it? I'm like, I don't even think. I just drive that way. So if you ever drive with me, it will be a boring, smooth ride. And if you drive with Mandy, I'll have to get a car, you know, like wheel alignment and a car wash afterwards, but you will have so much fun bouncing down the road with her. You know, this played out in other areas when it came to finances. We're just different. Some of you who are, you're not fun, you're the thinking people like me. You're gonna feel like this is so strange, but do you know how fun people approach money? This is so bizarre, you're not gonna believe this. Fun people view money as a tool to be used for having fun. That's how they view it. Like, hey, I got some money. We should use it for some fun. That's how fun people view money. And I'm so different, right? And so I remember when I was like, we should put a budget together. A budget for a fun person is like, that's so constrictive, right? She's like, I don't know about this. Until I said, hey, we'll have a budget line that's for fun. She's like, hey, I could get on board with this, right? So we just eventually called the budget line the Mandy budget line. So it's just the fun budget line. She has her own line, right? And along the way, we started making some purchases. We're like, it doesn't fit in any of the categories we budgeted for. True story. So she just came up, we just have a nothing account, Elvin. It's like, it doesn't have anything in it. It never runs out of money, and we just take it from the nothing account every time we spend money that we didn't have, right? And so I'm like, did I just marry the government? She's just like, just giving money away. I'm like, we're having fun, right? We're having fun. But in all, to be fair to Mandy, she has to live with me. And true story, I'm just different. I'm calculating, and I think it was our first summer of marriage, maybe our second summer of marriage. We owned a 1999, I think, Pontiac Sunfire red car. And I read somewhere at the time that to run your air conditioning gave you worse fuel mileage. I'm like, hey, we could save like 17 cents on this trip. So true story, that entire summer, we drove all summer without using the AC once. We went through like mainland BC. It was like plus 30, plus 35. Windows open. We each had our arm out. That summer, it was just weird. She had a sunburn on this arm. I had a sunburn on this arm. We were one flesh. We kind of made up two sunburn arms. I don't know. It just worked out. But we're just different, right? And although we are attracted, and I was so attracted to her, along the way, it can begin to oppose. And along the way, the worst thing I can do as a husband is to crush the free spirit, the fun in my wife. And yet along the way, sometimes the thing I'm most tempted to do is to crush the free spirit, the fun in my wife. And I'm like tempted to you should think like me, which would be awful. Who wants to be married to themselves? It would be miserable. And yet along the way, sometimes the very things we were attracted to, we want to push out. So how can we live? And how can we live not destroying each other because of our differences? When we were first dating, we told our parents, oh yeah, don't worry, Mom, we're different, but we complement each other. And then 3 years into marriage, we're killing each other. And what happened to this was supposed to be complementary? How do we live with that lens? Well, the Apostle Paul in Philippians chapter 2 gives us a picture of how we live with that lens, celebrating the goodness of our differences. How will we do that? Here's what he says. If you have your Bibles, turn to Philippians chapter 2. The Apostle Paul says this, therefore, and he's writing to the church, he's not writing specifically to marriages, but this is true, and this secret ingredient to how we live with our differences, celebrating them rather than destroying each other, will come out. Therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any common sharing in the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, what he's saying is this true of you? Is it true that, are you encouraged that you are united? You've put your faith in Jesus and Christ lives in you? Yeah, I'm encouraged by that. Do you love? Are you comforted by the fact that God loves you with an unending love? Yeah, that's awesome. Do you understand that you share the same spirit that the people in the church share? And if you're in a marriage where you both believe, the same spirit of Christ is in your spouse? If this is true, and if the outcome of this is any kind of tenderness, any kind of compassion, to which we'd say, yeah, either those are true or I want them to become more true of me as a follower of Jesus. Then Paul says, then make my joy complete by being one, being like-minded, having the same love that you got from God, being one in spirit and of one mind. Yeah, but they're so different and sometimes their personality annoys me. But he make my joy complete, he says. Live in a one relationship. How? With all our differences, how are we going to put on a lens that allows us to live? What's this, the key ingredient? Apostle Paul says this next. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. And when Paul says do nothing, often I kind of read in there like, do most things, do some things without selfish ambition. But Paul doesn't say most things or some things. He says all things. Do nothing, not one thing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. What's selfish ambition? It's the advancement of self at the expense of others. Do nothing out of a desire to advance yourself at the expense of others without considering the other. Do nothing that advances self without considering the good of others. Or vain conceit. Vain conceit is for your own glory. What should we do instead? He says, here's the secret ingredient. Rather, in humility, and now he defines humility for us, value others above yourselves. In humility, rather than pride, which is always thinking about self at the expense of others, in humility, value others above yourselves. See, humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking about yourself less because you're too busy thinking about others. See, often we think, oh, I'm a pretty humble guy because I keep walking around like, yeah, I'm not good at anything. I'm no good. That's not humility, that's self-deprecation. Humility, and here's the deal. If you're self-deprecating, who are you thinking about? Yourself. Humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's understanding I have the same value, intrinsic value, as every other person out of the 8 billion people in the world today. Our value is all the same, being created by God. And if we didn't know we had value, we've been recreated in Christ when we place our faith in him. Humility isn't thinking, well, my value must be less. Humility is saying, I'm on equal terms, but I'm going to consider others. I'm going to live as if they're more valuable than me. Apostle Paul goes on, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. See, we could say, well, I just won't look after my own interests. I'm just going to be neutral, but that's not what humility is. It's not the key to great marriage relationship or any relationship. The key to a great relationship is intentionally, aggressively looking out for the needs of others above your own. Does that mean you don't look out for your needs? Of course not. It just means as we look out for our own needs, we're considering others' needs. It's just a little bit higher on the priority list than even our own. And you will find, if you talk to couples who have growing and healthy marriages, you will find that they have spades and bucket loads of this. That they continually, every single day, they invest in their relationship by valuing their spouse, even though they're on completely equal terms in value. That they live like their spouse is more valuable than they are themselves. They just act like it. You know, one of the things that I think we think about when we think about relationships, which I'd like us to maybe reconsider this morning, is we approach relationships and we consider where we're at. And we say things like, yeah, my marriage isn't very good right now. We just don't have a good marriage. Or, hey, my marriage is doing awesome right now. And either we're like super encouraged or we're super depressed, and it's kind of like this is the outcome, and it kind of is, it's described who we are and who we're gonna be. But I wanna invite us to a new idea of relationships. I don't think relationships ever fully arrive. Relationships are always in motion. They're always in motion. See, the marriage relationship is not as much about the outcome of where you currently are, but the trajectory of where you are heading. And this is so important because it gives hope. If you're like, my marriage relationship is awful, but guess what? The most important piece is not where you're at, because you cannot change the past. None of us can. But the most important piece is this: where is your relationship heading? And maybe it's in a tough, difficult spot, but if you are investing and your spouse is investing and it's growing, keep holding on. And likewise, it's a challenge for us to not ever say, well, my marriage is good, and just let our foot off the gas or stop investing in the relationship. Because relationships are always in motion. And you may say, well, my relationship with my wife or my husband's really good right now. Don't stop investing. Because you're going to wake up one day and say, what happened to our marriage? It's kind of like planting a fruit tree. When you plant a fruit tree at first, you might work the soil and aerate the land and fertilize and water and make sure there's sun coming in. And eventually, after some time, what does the fruit tree start producing? Fruit. And you start thinking, I'm going to enjoy the fruit on the fruit tree. But in that moment of enjoying the fruit, you stop investing in the roots. You may enjoy the fruit for a season, and all of a sudden it's going to stop producing fruit, and you're going to say, what happened to my tree? See, the question is, how are you investing in the roots of your marriage relationship right now? And what would it look like for you to see the differences and the things that maybe drew you to your spouse at first, and now it's like there's conflict everywhere? What would it look like to change your perspective and start investing in the roots of your relationship? And how are you going to invest? The Apostle Paul has told us, value your spouse above yourself every day. And every day, because relationships are always in motion, and if you take a week or a month or a year off, all of a sudden you're going to say, what happened to my marriage? And the reality is you stopped investing and the trajectory changed. And if your marriage is in a tough spot, start valuing your spouse above yourself and start investing in the roots and see what fruit comes in time. You know, I want to share with you a few areas we are different in and ways that maybe we can value our spouse above ourselves every single day. You know, one of the areas in marriage that I think husbands and wives, we're just different in, we approach this differently, is the area of physical intimacy. And there was a couple in our church years ago, an elderly couple, they called it the celebration of marriage. I'm like, that's awesome. But unfortunately, sometimes the celebration of marriage is the dismantling of our marriages. And when we talk about valuing our spouse above ourselves, sometimes the most selfish place in our marriage relationship is in this very area. And selfishness in physical intimacy is a very good recipe for destroying your marriage. And it will. But likewise, if you're investing in the roots and valuing your spouse above yourself, selflessness in physical intimacy is a great way to build a strong marriage relationship. And I know that we're different, men and women, we approach this differently. We have different ideas. But I want to invite you, if you're married, what would it look like to value your spouse above yourself in this very difficult area? And you can read more about this. Paul talks about it in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. It's in his word. You know, it's interesting. This thing that was supposed to bring celebration and joy often becomes a place of misuse of power. In a marriage relationship, physical intimacy is not a power to be used, ever. And yet so often we use it as a power above, abusing, or we use it as power underneath, manipulating our own spouse. And yet we've been invited to value our spouse above ourselves and see it as a gift to be shared together. Which means don't put pressure. If you're valuing your spouse, and live in a sharing gift that God has given in this very intimate area. Now, some of you maybe have experienced power, manipulation, abuse in this area, and you might have to listen to a message from a few weeks ago, and you might need some separation in your relationship, because love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. But how could you use this very important area of marriage to value your spouse above yourself every day? To value your spouse above yourself. So what would it look like to value our spouse? Well, we saw this already in 1 Peter chapter 3. To value your spouse includes knowing them, and that takes intentional, aggressive work. To know them, and then as their personality and who they are is revealed and you get to know them, you honor rather than try to change them. Remember, you don't want to be married to yourself. Honor the things that make them them, even if they're different and you don't understand them the way that you just think differently. I want to give you a picture. Consider someone if we think about knowing and valuing someone above ourselves, think of someone that you idolize, that you look up to. You just think, if there's someone more valuable in this world, it's that person. Maybe you're a sports fan, you're like Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby or Steph Curry. Maybe you're not into sports and you're like, you know, if Mother Teresa were in the room, that would, like, Billy Graham, maybe it's the Queen, you know, I don't know who it is, but someone you idolize. And imagine they came to live in your house for a week. The person you think they're more valuable than me. How would you treat them? My guess is you'd want to get to know them. And all the things you got to know, you would honor about them. I bet you would value them as more important than yourself. And if they told a story and they got some of the details wrong, maybe you'd correct them. But my guess, how would you correct them? This is Mother Teresa you're talking to, right? If they tell a joke and you're like, that wasn't that funny, how would you respond? At the end of the time, you drive back to the airport, Mother Teresa's in the bags are in the back, just grab them, you're out. My guess is you'd treat them differently, wouldn't you? See, one of the challenges in our marriage to value our spouse above ourselves is because it's every day. Do you know that you're married to your spouse every day? They never go away. And you become extremely familiar. And we can become too familiar with the environment that we stop honoring the very person that's closest to us. We stop honoring them. You know, one of the ways I think we value our spouse and honor them is in the way that we speak to them. Ephesians chapter 4, 32 or 29 says this: do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for yourselves. Right? Not when you're living to value others above yourself. Not when you're living like Christ lived towards us. But only what is helpful. Speak only words that are helpful for building others up, according not to your needs, according to their needs. Why? That it may benefit them. See, living others first changes everything about how we live, how we treat, but also how we speak to others. And Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21 says that in our tongues, we carry the power of life and death every day. And how are you speaking to your spouse? If you're gonna value your spouse above yourself, how are you speaking to your spouse? Are you bringing life to the marriage relationship, or are you bringing death? And you can apply this to any relationship, your grandparenting relationship, your parenting relationships, your work relationships, the church relationships. As you speak words and you value others above yourself, are you speaking words that bring life, that build and benefit others? Or are you living with selfish ambition and vain conceit? John Gottman, a number of years ago in his organization, did some analysis of couples, and they found some amazing, unbelievable correlations between how we speak and marital success. This is unbelievable. Just by analyzing and seeing couples, they found that healthy marriage couples had a ratio of 5 to 1 positive to negative interactions. That means there was 5 positive interactions for every 1 negative interaction. Which means if you're like, I had to tell my wife some hard things, I had to let him know, right? Oh, I'll just kind of even it out, I'll kind of compliment him on something, right? That's 1 for 1, that doesn't cut it. 5 to 1 were the interactions. And interestingly enough, they found that even when they were in conflict, they kept the 5 to 1 ratio. Healthy marriages. What they found is marriages that ended in divorce had a 1 to 1.1 positive to negative interaction. 50-50. Ah, I said some hard things, I'll say something nice. Your mouth carries the power of life and death. And interestingly, they found that if they sat down with a couple and listen to them for 15 minutes, try to resolve a conflict, they could predict with over 90% accuracy whether that relationship was gonna make it or would end in divorce, simply by how they interacted with one another. Value your spouse above yourself. Interestingly, in 2013, Harvard Business Review had an article about how this relates to working teams. And it's all across the board, and they're finding the exact same things. The highest performing teams in work environments have a 5.6 to 1 ratio of praise to criticism. Medium performing teams were 1.9 to 1. And the lowest performing teams were less than 1, 0.36 positive to negative interactions. What would it look like for you to value your spouse? And maybe for you, you don't have a spouse, your roommate, your friends, your church, your workplace. To bring life rather than death. To value your spouse above yourself every single day with the words that you use. Just a few verses after encouraging the church in Ephesus, saying, hey, use words to build and benefit others. Value others above yourselves. The Apostle Paul writes this, follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children, and walk in the way of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. Do you have any encouragement from being united with Christ? Any comfort from his love? Follow God's example, walk in that way of love. And the reason we live with we value others above ourselves in all of our relationships, and especially our marriage relationships as followers of Jesus, is because this is what God did for us in Christ Jesus. That Jesus, who is more valuable than us, he's the Son of God, did not come to be served, but to serve. And live like we were more valuable than him by giving up his life for us. This is the character of God himself. Value your spouse above yourself every day. I want to leave you with 4 things to do. Okay, four things. Really, really practical. First one is this. I want to invite you this week, if you're married, value your spouse. Some of you are like, well, that okay, we already talked about that. I don't know if we have. See, here's the reality. If you do not value your spouse, you will never value your spouse. Let me say that again, because this is deep. If you do not value your spouse, you will not value your spouse. I think along the way, in the journey of romantic relationships, opposites attract at first, and it can drive us crazy later. And sometimes our differences, we start to see our spouse through the irritations of our differences. And we gain a lens, and everything they do, we see through the lens of that irritation and those differences. And the very thing that attracted us is the thing that starts to destroy us. It's like living life with blue glasses on. Everything you see is tinted what? Blue. And along the way in our relationship, and it happens so subtly, we don't even realize it. We just start seeing our spouse through the blue lens, a tinted lens. And everything they do, we just write off as that's them. And I want to invite you today to take off. And some of you, you're in a place in your marriage right now. This lens is so, so strong. I want to invite you. What would it look like to take off the lens and start declaring to yourself, my spouse is valuable. That my spouse was created in the image of God, and that includes their personality. And it drives me crazy. But it's good. Because sometimes I want a clean vehicle. But I'm so thankful that she's a lot of fun. And sometimes I don't want to have a sunburnt arm driving down the road with no AC on. But I'm so thankful, I'm taking a new lens. I'm so thankful that he thinks about the future and cares about us. See the lens that's changed? And so some of us, we need a new lens, and it means we need to start. And this is the first challenge. What would it look like this week to start and say, I'm going to value my spouse? Number two, once you start valuing your spouse, think of ways to value your spouse. Start investing, be intentional, aggressive, and say, how am I going to invest in the roots of our relationship? Maybe the fruit's not come yet. But what would it look like to invest in the roots of our relationship? And think of ways. You know, maybe it's like, their love language is just so different than me. What is it? I want to know them, and then what I gain in knowledge, I'm going to honor that. I'm going to value my spouse. I'm going to think of ways to value my spouse this week. Number three, start looking for ways to value your spouse. Start looking for ways to value your spouse. Start putting it into practice. And then number four, ask yourself at the end of every day, did I value my spouse today? And if you didn't, you got two tomorrow. It's going to be a good day, right? This was taken from John Maxwell in a leadership talk he did. I just kind of applied it to marriage relationships. Marriage relationships. And here's the challenge this week for those of you who are married. I want you for the next 10 days. Here's your Pastor Elvin challenge. Maybe you're like, I can't do that every day. Okay, let's start with 10 days. Start investing in the roots of your relationship for the next 10 days. And do this every day. Value your spouse. Think of ways to value them. Look for ways to value them. At the end of the year, each day, say, did I value my spouse today? How did I value them? And the reason I picked 10, it's on purpose, scriptural number. When the Israelites were in exile, you might remember the story of Daniel. He didn't want to defile himself with the food, and he said to the attendant, give me 10 days. We'll eat vegetables and water and just look at us and see how much smarter and how much better looking we are. It's a spiritual number, so we're going to go with 10, okay? So just invest in the fruit, the roots of your marriage relationship for 10 days. And at the end of 10 days, I want you to consider what's happened to, and you're going to be tempted to say, what's happened to them? But my guess is, you're actually going to have to think about this. What's happened to me? And you start investing in the roots. And my guess is fruit will come. But even if fruit doesn't come, you will go to bed at peace at night, knowing that your Father says, well done, good and faithful servant. Well done. That in the same way your Father in heaven has loved you, you've extended love to your marriage partner. Love is patient, love is kind. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. Love values the other above itself. So value your spouse above yourself every day. Thanks so much for joining us today. We trust you have been encouraged and challenged in your faith journey. If you're desiring prayer, want more information on our church, want to partner with us, or be involved in any way, please go to our website at mountoliveefc.com. We'll see you next time.